Welcome back to episode 186 of Tall Boy Radio. And as we always say, who knows where it goes when the beer flows? We're going to say welcome to the new countries that have started listening to us since the last time we sat down and recorded, which was early July. So hello, country number 58, Jordan, country 59, Austria, and number 60, who we added today, the Lebanon. The Lebanon, if you're familiar with that old song. So before we introduce our guest today, let's say hello to Gaz and find out if he's had a good holiday. Gazza?
Yeah, evening all. Evening the world. It's been, it feels like it's been a while. It probably has been a while since we've sat down and recorded. It's lovely to be back after my travels to very sunny and very hot and humid America. We spent sort of a couple of weeks in Florida doing the parks sort of thing. So yeah, looking forward to this, and always good to have guests sort of joining us on the podcast. So a newbie to us. So yeah, looking forward to where it's going to go.
Indeed, indeed. And I myself also back from America. I've been to Texas, as you can tell if you're watching the live stream from the hat. Ron, I told you I would wear it, but I am going to take it off because it is playing havoc with my headphones. So we're going back to the States again tonight with our guest. So I'll let him say hello now and tell us a little bit about why we've invited him on.
Yeah, hey, I appreciate you guys inviting me on. I'm Dan Killer Kennedy. I'm from Pennsylvania, USA, and I'm here to talk about some competitive eating. I got a few years under my belt, so it should be interesting.
Yeah, a few years and a few meals. So yeah, I shared a video on our WhatsApp group for guys to watch. And it's what we were just talking about earlier. So we're going to be looking at like what it takes to make it then in the world of competitive eating. And one of the things that you do a little bit different, we were chatting there beforehand, is something that's quite big in America is sort of speed eating as well, isn't it?
Speed eating, I think, is really what separates the United States competitive eaters from the rest of the country. A lot of our contests and stuff are based on like 6 to 10 minute formats, where like if you take Thailand or Japan, their formats are like 30 minutes, 45 and an hour. So speed is obviously a huge, huge difference maker. And I think that I wouldn't say that I would classify that as making us better competitive eaters, but I think that makes us kind of separates us from everybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So the video that I shared with Gaz to watch, so it was, well, we were chatting about it before. You can tell me the place and the name and the prize actually as well. But it was a burrito, which was £3, literally the size of my forearm and wider. And how long did it take you to eat that?
Minute 22, I think. You had to beat the current record, which was, I think, 131. And I think that was held by Bob Shout. And I think that, I think it was 122, but the prize was $3,200. So actually, we flew down to Texas. We had an event that weekend also. So we went through that area and did the burrito. And the thing that's the difference in that challenge, you had to call and get in a place, like you had to get in line. So I know that right before I did it, Jeff Esper tried to beat the record and he just missed it. And then I got a call and said, hey, Jeff didn't do it. Are you coming down through? And I'm like, yeah. So we booked some flights, so it's kind of one of them things where if you're going to do it, you got to kind of jump on it and kind of get in line. And then when your time comes, you kind of got to jump on a plane and go, so because Texas obviously is not really a drive down the road for me. So.
Yeah. You're not wrong. So 82 seconds to eat a £3 burrito. Yep. You think you could do that, guys?
Absolutely no chance. it's strange because, you see the sort of programs that have been on TV for the past, your man versus food and that sort of stuff, and it's quantity, and there are various sort of timed challenges where he's got to eat it within like an hour, and he can't do this and he can't do that. And one thing I was going to ask was, is there other than eating quicker, is there a different way of preparing yourself for one that potentially has a time limit as opposed to a quantity? I mean, are there events where you have to eat an amount, or is it all timed, or is there a difference?
Speed challenges are obviously different. You have to change your pace, your technique, obviously your consumption of water. Everything has to change. You have to adjust that for the format of the contest. But one thing that does help you obviously eat a lot faster is being able to consume an obnoxious amount of water. So, say you have a higher capacity eater like myself, you have the tendency to be able to use a lot of water. So like in that that burrito challenge, you know, along with a 3-pound burrito, I probably drank close to a gallon of water. So, wow. You know, I mean, I'm basically shooting full 16-ounce bottles of water, grabbing hold of them and basically forcing the burrito down with the liquid, you know, so because you don't really have time to chew it at all because, I mean, let's face it, you know, a minute and a half is not a whole lot to eat. I mean, you're talking about eating 3/8 to almost a half a pound. You know, you're eating a pound and a half a minute, more than a pound and a half a minute. So, you know, you have to use the liquid to propel it.
That's just frightening when you sort of try. I can't comprehend eating that quantity in that amount of time. And it was one of the things that, because you see people that, and I can't, but they have the ability effectively to open the back of their throat and just, they can, you know, they can glug pints down in gallons of water within a second, mm-hmm. or a couple of seconds, because they literally just pour it down their throat. Whereas I don't know about yourself, Adam, but I would have to gulp, which obviously then takes time. So is that something that you can do? Can you literally just force it down in one go sort of thing? You literally take a mouthful and then it just goes down, or?
Yeah, you basically would bite off what you feel comfortable trying to swallow, you know, and that's a mechanic all on its own right. You know, I think that that's one of the biggest things that separates a person that can swallow a large amount and a person that has a hard time swallowing a large amount. One, obviously, your God-given throat size. I mean, let's face it. People are tall. People are short. People, you know, have size 12 shoes. Some have 8. So the size of your throat has a lot to do with it, too. I mean, if you can swallow a large amount. But the biggest difference in that is not being afraid to choke on something. I mean, a lot of people have that instant fear when they speed eat. They're like, oh, yeah. I'm gonna choke. But really, if you ever want to be a competitive speed eater and become one of the fastest in the world, you almost have to have absolutely no fear of ever choking in a contest. You know, Molly Schuyler is an absolute perfect example of that. I mean, I've seen her swallow an entire McDonald's hamburger, you know, without literally down the hatch in one shot. So, you know, I mean, wow. She still holds a record for the fastest burrito. I think she ate the burrito Zilla, which is 5 pounds in a minute 25 or something along that line. So, I mean, she literally just shoves the thing. It's just going down in one shot, you know? So, but yeah, it's an incredible feat.
It is. It is an incredible feat. And I'd be curious to know what effect it has on your digestive system a day or so afterwards.
I mean, let's face it, the human body was never really, I don't think it was really designed to handle that kind of thing. So, I mean, there's certain ways to handle it. You know, I've always said it's kind of a balancing act. You know what I mean? I mean, people obviously assume, you know, this and that and the other thing, but you know, the whole thing with competitive eating is it does wreak havoc on your body, just like bodybuilding or professional sports. It takes its toll on your body. And I think that that's why you see such a high turnover in competitive eating. It's similar to bodybuilding. You know, I mean, you know, like even powerlifters like Eddie Hall and Half Thor, Brian Shaw, they get to a point where they've done it so long that their body just no longer can sustain. So I think that that's also why competitive eating has a high turnover too. You know, you use and abuse your body so long to try to be good at something, but you know, it's kind of one of them things where you got to get in, you got to make your mark, and you got to get out, you know, before it gets to the point where you've just beaten yourself up so bad that you live with that for the rest of your life.
So how long have you been doing it then?
I think this is year 7. I started back in 2016. So this would be going on the seventh full year. But I never really, my first couple of years, I really never traveled a lot. I did a little bit here and there, just kind of trying to get my feet wet, you know. So, but the last 4 to 5 years, I really, really went pretty hard over the course of traveling, you know, at least 2 weekends a month, whether it be California, Florida, Tennessee, Texas, you know. So Japan, we had the great privilege of being able to travel overseas, and what a great opportunity that was to go to Japan and be part of the Battle of the Big Eater, and something that went away back when I first started. And I was always like, man, that was one of the things I wanted to do so bad. And finally we got a call that it was coming back, and Molly and Todd and their show, they put all that together. And it was just a humbling experience to be able to, you know, get an opportunity to do that.
Is this something that you do effectively full-time? Do you have a job outside of competitive eating? Do you just travel around looking for events? Or, I mean, how regularly are the events?
Yeah, competitive eating is a side. It's a side deal for me. I have a full-time job. I own a auto collision shop. I've been doing that for 22 years. I started that you know, basically right out of high school when I was 18, I got into fixing up cars. And so, yeah, I mean, as far as competitive eating, you know, it's basically like a weekend thing, you know, like we'll leave on a Friday night, we might do a contest, we might hit a few challenges and then fly home, you know, or sometimes like the corn dog contest we just did last month, you know, that's something you have to be there for Friday and Saturday. So obviously I took a couple of days off of work and went out, but the offset for the body, like my primary business, I have to be making more going out of town than I'm willing to take 2 days off for, you know what I mean? So like if I can go to a contest and win $500. Yeah. Well, the problem is I missed 2 days of work and it cost me $200 to get there. I'm not really gaining anything. So I would opt to not go.
Yeah. No, I get that. And you know, it's a balancing act. I'm curious, you know, you said straight out of school, college, you know, you set up your own business or you work for yourself. How did you actually get into it in the first place? And how did you first discover that you can A, eat vast quantities of food, and B, do it very, very quickly? Like, it was it just something you went, oh, I'll just try shoving this down my throat and see how this works. How did you get into it?
Well, actually, the funny story about the whole thing is at my highest weight, I actually weighed 400 pounds. So I was always a very, very big eater. I always could eat I could eat all day long, you know. So I always had that appetite. But, you know, when it came to a point like in 20, late 14 going into 15, you know, I kind of, you know, I had a daughter in her teenage years at the time. Kylie was growing up, you know, and I was getting to the point where, you know, I was that dad sitting on the sidelines just watching and not, you know, I wasn't part of it. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm the dad that's out of shape and I'm not, you know, she's going to get into all these sports and I'm not going to be able to do it with her. And so not only for her, but for myself, you know, mainly, I decided it was time to make the change and get that weight off. And in 2015 into 16, in one calendar year, I lost 145 pounds. I went from 345 to 200.
Wow.
And I was in a Facebook group and we had like a contest going on with weight loss, and it was, you know, 60, 80, 100 people in it. I can't remember exactly. We were really, you know, encouraging each other. And I had a friend, Joe Evilsizer, that was a fitness coach at the time and kind of lost all that weight, you know, and he's like, oh, well, let's have some fun. You know, you've been on such a strict diet. We should go out and try a food challenge. And of course, when I was a big guy, younger, I actually watched Adam Richman and Man Versus Food. And I was always like, oh man, I bet you I could eat like that guy, you know? And so I go and I do this omelet challenge, you know, local to me. And I think I did like a 4.5 pound challenge in like 16 minutes or something. And I'm like, huh, interesting. And I never really thought much of it. And then like, I saw another one and I'm like, oh, I had to go try that, you know? So then it was kind of like a weekend hobby. Like I worked out all week. I stayed in shape. And then that's kind of how I treated myself. I would go and do a food challenge on the weekend. And then of course it snowballed. Then I found out that I had the ability to eat pretty fast. So, you know, and that's kind of where the moniker came from when I was losing the weight and stuff. The one guy that was the quote unquote fitness guru in the group, he would always say, man, you're killing off the fat. And then I became Killer Kennedy. So I kind of just adapted that right into the, you know, now he's killing food, you know? So that's kind of where that whole thing stemmed from. But really, Killer Kennedy wasn't something that started because of competitive eating. It actually started because of the weight loss. So,
wow. Okay. I did wonder, because, you know, Killer Kennedy can sometimes be considered an FBI policy.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my, like, like a backyard conspiracy back in the presidential days or something, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we do have a question that we've been asked to ask you. A gentleman by the name of Sean the Mouth Eats wants to ask you for you to share your thoughts on French fries.
My overall thoughts on French fries, it's not – people think that I just straight despise French fries, but the facts of the matter is I actually don't mind fries. I mind challenges that – supplement a challenge with like 6 pounds to just make it like sheerly impossible, because it's one of the hardest things to eat mass quantities of. So, and it seemed like for a long time there, like every challenge I got had like 5 pounds of fries, 6 pounds of fries. Oh, we know that guy doesn't like fries. Let's put an extra 2 pounds on his plate, because it's funny, because all he does is complain about how much the fries suck, you know? So it really isn't the fact that, like, if you were to take me out to eat, I would get a burger and fries. Like, I don't mind fries. I prefer onion rings, but I don't hate fries. I hate mass quantities of fries in challenges, because the biggest problem is, too, by the time you get the challenge, they're cold. And you know how hard cold fries are to eat, and it's awful. Yeah. And there's like anywhere between 3 and 8 pounds of the things. And I'm like, every time I'm just like, man, these damn fries. And it seems like I can, like, if the challenge is 8 pounds and half of it's fries, I can do the first half in like 2 minutes, and then the fries take me like 20 because all I'm doing is complaining about them the whole time. So that's kind of where that came from, you know. They call it the killer kryptonite. Anytime somebody sees fries, they're like, "Oh, he's got a plate of kryptonite."
So are you known then? So when you book into a challenge somewhere, do they know the name? You know, like I watched the hot dog challenge that you did last weekend. I watched it live. You know, when you book in to do it, do they think, "Oh, this guy's coming"? We need to maybe up the challenge a little bit.
So sometimes what happens is, like if you reach out to a restaurant or something on Facebook, they'll look at your profile. And sometimes you won't get anything from them. Sometimes you'll get a reply that says something along the lines of like, "Well, we took a look at your profile, and by the looks of things, our challenge isn't going to be anything to you." You know, like that hot dog contest I did last weekend, they didn't look me up or nothing. When I showed up, they just thought I was just some guy off the street that was coming through the area. And then I ended up eating 41 in 10 minutes. Just, you know, I honestly really wasn't coming. this sounds bad. I mean, I really wasn't even trying. I was joking and handing the guys next to me buns and dipping them in water and filling my cups up real slow. And I wasn't doing that to be a smart or look like a jerk or anything. I just, you know, I'm trying to, it's more or less entertaining the crowd, you know, because if I'm going to go there and I'm going to blow away a competition, you know, which is never what I set out to do. I want those guys to enjoy themselves too, you know, but the thing is, I always, and this is something I want to put out there, I always clarify with a promoter. Like I messaged Tony's, which is who had that contest, and I said, "Listen, I just want you to know I'm a professional eater, you know, and whether they look me up or not is, you know," and a lot of people, the problem is, I think a lot of people say they're a professional eater. So when I messaged him and said, I just wanted to make sure that this contest was open to professionals, because if it is an amateur contest, I don't want to show up to that and then everybody else be upset. If it's supposed to be, "Hey, we're just making this fun for the community," okay, that's perfectly fine. But, you know, and then maybe they'll separate it into a pro and an amateur contest. But I always clarify that, hey, I'm a professional eater. I don't want to show up and ruin your event, because it is their event. It's not my event, you know, so.
Yeah.
Well, I think the guy who came second did eat something like 9. And I thought, fair play to that dude, because there's no way I could do 9 hot dogs in 10 minutes. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
No, and I even told him, I said, if you come back and train next year, I guarantee you could probably do 20. You know, so that's kind of one of them things where, you know, are those guys going to take it serious and try harder next year? You know, because next year I know that contest, I spoke with the guy that owns the place, and he wants to make it professional and amateur. So now the amateur field will be leveled, and they're going to try to get some sponsors on hand. Salins, which is big up in the Buffalo area, they're like a Nathan's, but Salins is their hot dog brand, and that's kind of some that they're trying to get them on board for a bigger sponsorship, you know, so that you have to keep an eye out. That might end up being a professional contest next year, so we'll see.
Do you always know, so when you see the events, do they always pre-publish the type of food that it's going to be? Will they say that it's a hot dog, or it's a burrito, or it's an omelet? Will they pre-publish that so that you know what you're getting into? Or is it a case to turn up and see what it is and then think, "Oh, crikey, I haven't eaten one of them quickly for a while. I've got to adapt to what I do or change things up"? How does that work?
It's always predetermined. I mean, if somebody's hosting a contest, they'll say, you know, "Come to our wing eating contest," or "Come to our," you know, the only one I really ever went to that was kind of a surprise was Battle of the Big Eaters. Battle of the Big Eaters was not, we had really no idea what we were even getting into. And of course, you know, being that it was a foreign country, you know, anything that we ate over there was something I'd never experienced before anyways, you know, so that's kind of one of them things where that was really the only contest that I ever went into that was like, "Hey, this is the round you're in, and you're going to be eating this." And I'm like, "Oh,
right.
Well, what is this?" You know, and then they would show you and you're like, "Okay, well, yeah, it's obviously foreign to me." So, and the thing that's crazy about that, like one of the rounds I was in Tokyo was called Shabu Shabu, and that's very thinly sliced meat. You know, very, very high end quality meat. And actually, what's funny about the whole event is you actually cook it yourself. So they would hand you raw trays of the thin beef. You would pick it up. You would put it into boiling water. You had to basically what they call shabu shabu, which is cook the meat, then plate it, and then eat it, and repeat and repeat and repeat. And that's a 45 minute contest. And I ate 15 pounds of it.
Oh my God. It sort of makes you think, oh, like, sick just thinking about it. It's dude, like, yeah. Some, you know, I eat and I get full. And you know, there's always that occasion where you eat and you feel full, but I'll always have a couple more mouthfuls. I'll just finish it. Then you think, oh my God, I feel stuffed. Like, yeah. I proper couldn't eat anything else. I can't imagine eating just that amount.
No, and this is the thing as well. The other side of it as well, dude, is like I say, you used to be like a heftier guy. You certainly sure. are now. You know, you're pretty svelte. So, like I say, I've just come back from Texas and I gained 10 pounds in 10 days, you know what I mean, from eating like the barbecue out there. How do you keep the weight off? How do you keep as trim as you are?
I mean, it's really a balancing act, and I've told a lot of people this, you know, it's one of them things where it's calories in, calories out. You know, you have to learn a balance. I mean, most people got to realize I'm not doing this every day of my life. I mean, I haven't done any competitive eating since the hot dog contest. So that's, you know, over a week, you know, so, and you also got to realize when you're eating mass quantities, your body is not, the human body was never meant to process or digest that amount of food. So most of it, I hate to say it, it just goes right out. You know yeah. what I mean? I mean, it basically goes out faster than it came in, you know? So it's one of the things, it's kind of like, and this isn't a stab or anything about to anybody, but like if you ever watched the show 600 Pound Life, there's a reason why the people that are on that show can eat 10, 20, 30, 40,000 calories a day and they're only gaining a pound a month, 2 pounds a month, because their body at a certain point doesn't even process it anymore because it's so overloaded. Like the human body, they say after, I think it's after 10,000 calories or 12,000 calories, the body doesn't even try to even do anything with it because it's in so much shock, you know? So yeah. it's kind of like a balancing act, I would say, for the most part.
So when you sort of, and I'm sure there are times where you've perhaps been met with the challenge. And I mean, well, I'll ask you, I mean, is there ever a challenge that you haven't been able to complete in terms of a quantity where you've left a bit on the plate, think I literally can't eat that, or has that happened to you at all? Or
there have been a few challenges over my career that I haven't finished. And then what happened too was there were a couple that I wasn't able to finish back when I first started. You know, they were just a little bit out of my wheelhouse. Now, could I finish them now? I'm sure I could. But a lot of them became defunct. And I think that, you know, obviously over the whole world, you know how 2020, 2021, 2022 kind of went, you know, and one, it ruined a lot of, you know, restaurants and things like that. You know, there wasn't really a whole lot of places that made it out of that. There were a lot of restaurants that closed, and a couple of them, the ones that I can think of four offhand that I wasn't able to go back and beat again because the restaurants closed, you know, so. And then there are some that I was able to go back and finally do, you know, and still to this day, I'm like, well, I did go back and do it, but I still think I could do it faster, you know, than I did even just for the redemption. So if I went back to do it again, but the problem is, you know, a lot of restaurants, like me personally, I don't really like to go into restaurants 4 and 5 and 6 times, even if they would let you do the challenge. I kind of feel bad doing that because really they know when you walk in the door that you're going to take their money, you know, you're going to be giving away the food for free. So I never really like to, I always like to tip well and stuff, you know, make sure the waitresses are taken care of. And, but, you know, as far as, you know, overall, like as far as the challenges and, you know, unless a restaurant invites me back, I won't go back and do their challenge multiple times, even if they say, you know, hey, you guys should come back and do it anytime you want to stop in, do it again, you know, so I pretend not to.
I was going to say that there must have been times where when you sort of first started out, maybe you weren't a professional eater, that you've sort of taken advantage of going in and the poster will say, you know, if you can finish this, eat free for a year here. And you're like, woo, I can do that. And there must have been, you know, just a little bit of you thinking, I'll do that. Because then but you've just obviously defunct that and said you didn't go back. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, when you're a little less known and it's a little bit more of a surprise element on that kind of stuff, you know, it's a little bit funner to do it like that, you know. But, you know, obviously when you get looked up and you walk in the door and they're like, oh, you know, blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing, you know, it's obviously a lot different. Yeah.
As well as the speed side of it and the amount side of it, there's another side to competitive eating, and that's the heat, the spice. How are you with those kind of challenges?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. not my thing. That's more of a Molly and Andrew Poole kind of thing. That's not my thing. If you've ever watched the jalapeno contest and you watch her, pardon the French, push my shit in because she's a million times better than that. that I'm ever going to be at that because she just handles it well. Same thing with Andy. If I was to go toe-to-toe with Andy in a spice challenge, there's no comparison. You know, I just don't handle the spice very well. I don't have a high tolerance for it. I never have. So, you know, that's definitely never going to be my forte. Will I do them? Sure. Am I good at it? By any means, no.
Because, you know, you see online, and I mean, I've never been to a live sort of spicy eating, sort of pepper eating contest or whatever. So, but you see it online and you just think, crikey, on the Scoville scale, it's like so many million Scoville. And you're like, bloody hell, like a Naga chili is hot enough for me in a, you know, like really hot. And then you look at them eating bloody Reapers and all sorts of stuff. And you're like, crikey.
Well, we did it on this podcast, didn't we? We had a few beers and it was an episode we called Drunken Ramblings. And we ate some, was it Carolina Reaper nuts?
Yeah.
And, oh my God, we made a holy show of ourselves because we did not cope with it well at all.
Was that like the was that the Death Nut Challenge or
yeah?
That's
the one.
Yeah. Some of them things like I know that Molly and Andy have done, like me just smelling the stuff. I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'll watch.
Yeah. Well, I was eating them. I'm getting stabbing pains in my gut, and I'm thinking, yeah, this cannot be good.
No. It's strange because, you know, you go out and you think, oh, okay, I'll go out to the local curry house or whatever, and I'll have, you know, I'll have a bit of a curry and I don't mind a bit of spice and it's nice. But then you get to a point where it gets so hot that actually you can't really just taste the food, and all you can taste is, like, it's hot, and you don't actually taste what you're eating. So to actually just munch on a pepper or whatever, it must be horrendous. You know, you see them biting into it and you're like, crap. And, you know, you see them diving for the milk or whatever that they've got, and you just like, honestly.
Yeah, it's kind of one of them things where it's kind of one of those things where I think spicy challenges are more like just like taste like burning. It doesn't really taste like anything to me. You know, one of the craziest things I ever witnessed in person was Molly and Andy did a challenge called the Hellfire Sub. And it was local to me, like 40 minutes away. I knew the owners, great guy. He says, I got something to challenge you guys. No, you guys are going to, if you do finish it, you're going to regret it. Blah, blah, blah. So we go up there and I know Andy did it, and I've never seen him like in as much agony and pain. And then Molly did it. And I, well, my honest opinion, I thought I was going to take her to the emergency room. It was so bad. I was like, you don't look good at all. You know, and this thing, he like opens up, he has this stuff called Reaper dust. And he like takes all these Reapers and grounds it up into this fine, like sugar grain pattern, like powder. And he opened the container and it just so happened that the wind caught it the right way. And the entire restaurant got filled with this Reaper dust, and everybody, they got the doors up. People are coughing and running out of the building, and I'm like, "Yeah, and that's going on the sandwich you're about to eat." And yeah, no, I'm good. I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna know. I'm like, no, that's okay. I'll watch. You know, so I'm like standing there with like my shirt up over my thing. I'm like, all right, here we go. You know, and yeah, but I mean, and those are the kind of things though that like I felt like. I'm like, wow, this is actually dangerous. Like,
yeah,
you know, but in the same regards, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, I just watched this woman eat 50 Packy chips in a row. So this isn't going to be nothing to her. You know, Molly sits there and eats 50 Packy chips. And I'm just like, I can't even lick the wrapper. I'm like, nope, it's not going to happen. You know? So, but you know, I'll never claim to be a spicy eater. I'm a quantity speed eater. I have absolutely no claims to being the hottest guy in America or the entire world for that, nor do I want it.
Just go back to, obviously going back to sort of you starting off, and it might sound a bit strange, when you're eating, do you enjoy the food, or is it just a case of I can't think about the food, I've just literally got to get it down, and the technique is just to eat it? Do you ever sit there and think, actually, maybe not the speed eating such, but maybe just the quantity, do you think, actually, I'm really enjoying this? Or is it just a case of, I'm just going to eat it?
I would say that there's definitely times where the food is better than others. Right. And I only say that because I feel like the better the food, the easier it is to enjoy.
Yeah.
But in a sheer speed setting, you really don't even have time to taste it. It's more of it's mindless eating. And I've always said the competitive eating is really, I think it's 60% mental, 40% physical. People say, oh no, that's not true. And I, you know, I've been doing this long enough that I truly feel like my biggest hurdle when I went from, I would say if you, I guess it depends on who classifies me. Am I a good eater or am I an elite eater? I guess you have to determine. But I felt like my change from great eater to elite eater was when I learned that mental game, when I learned how to mentally control. There's two different things. There's physical fullness and there's mental fullness. And a lot of people let mental fullness shut them down way before they're physically filled. You know, so I feel like once I finally learned that my mental fullness was completely different than my physical fullness, that's when I really, I think my game went to the next level.
Yeah. Because, right, so you might be able to help me and our listeners out here. I was always under the impression that if you shove a load of food down your stomach is probably full, or you feel like your stomach's full, but it sort of takes a while for that message to get your brain to tell you that you're full to stop eating. So then you just end up just almost gorging, and you eat almost too much because there's a delay in actually your stomach processing what it is that you eat, and then your brain saying, right, I've literally not got to eat anymore because I'm full. And is that the case? Is that what you're on about in terms of actually physically how much you can eat and then mentally you thinking that you're full and therefore don't eat anymore? Is that sort of what you're saying? Or
physically, I've always said, somebody always says, when do you know you're physically full? And I'll say, when it starts to come back out, then you know you're physically full. But if it's not forcing it.
So if you're sick, so will you?
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't brought it back up and you could be able to stick more in there. If it's holding it, you can put more in. You know, but see, and mental fullness is, it's kind of one of the things where, okay, you're eating a mass quantity and you get to the point where you're like, wow, I feel awful and I don't want to eat anymore. But then it's that, that's the mental game. Then it's okay. All I got to do is finish this. All I have to do is finish this. And you just push through that. You push through your body saying, hey, you're done. You say, well, I'll tell you when you're done. And you just continue to eat and eat and you just go through that. And once you work through that process, you almost can completely lie to your body and say you're never full, you know. But that's obviously where the physical game comes in. You know, you have to obviously train your stomach to be able to expand to that limits too. I mean, you can't just mentally eat 20 pounds of food. Your body has to physically be able to adapt to that. It has to be able to stretch out to that. It has to be able to move your internals around to be able to handle that amount. Because, you know, when you start, obviously, not many people can eat 20 pounds when they start out competitive eating. You have to work up to that, you know, and you train your body. But it's like anything. Every person has a natural limitation, you know. Some eaters may be able to eat 20 pounds. Some may never be able to eat more than 10. It just depends on what your body's physically capable of. It's kind of like a bodybuilder that starts natural. And then realizes that, okay, well, without some help, I'm not going to be able to get any bigger than this, you know? So it's kind of like, how far can you naturally go without training your body to competitive eat? You know, how far can you go until you have to, you know, start working on stretching it out with low calorie foods and liquid and figuring out technique and practice and training and stuff like that? You know, your body will naturally take you a certain distance, but then it's like, okay, well, if I ever want to get to the next level, then I've got to take it to the next level. So
leading on from that then, and you've sort of mentioned a couple of aspects there, how do you train your body? How do you train your stomach to be able to expand? Because you use a bodybuilder analogy, and what happens is you start to lift slightly more progressive weights and you get heavier and you get heavier and you get heavier. Is that the same with your eating? Do you just literally, you just almost on a slow process, or is it a quick process in terms of you just increase the amount of food that you eat and therefore your body gets used to? Is that how it works, or what are the techniques of the training?
You start out with low calorie foods and liquid training, you know, keep your electrolytes balanced. Obviously, you know, if you overpack the stomach multiple times, eventually it starts to adjust to that limit, you know. And I mean, the stomach is a muscle and it'll expand to whatever your body's limitation is, you know. So if you can, maybe you'll start out and you can consume maybe 6 pounds of liquid. And let's just use lettuce as an example. We use lettuce because that was the famous quote by Joey Chestnut one time. I use lettuce and water to stretch my stomach. Okay. So we'll base it off of that. You may start it out and, you know, you may be able to eat 6 pounds of lettuce and water and before you get uncomfortable, then the next time you do it, you might eat 6 1/4 and you might get stuck at that. You might get stuck at that limit for a few weeks. And then all of a sudden, oh, I can eat 6 1/2 pounds, you know, and you basically just continue and continue and continue to stretch that stomach out until it gets to the point where it can rapidly expand to that because it's muscle memory. So if I if I know for a fact that my body's trained to 20 pounds, I can eat 20 pounds with no preparation. I know exactly what, how the body will react to it. You know, at, I would have to say at my best capacity, I was the human stomach. Let's just, we'll use this as an example. The human stomach as a natural, you feel the sensation of fullness around 32 ounces, which is a Gatorade, which is about a quarter of a gallon or 2 pounds, two and a half, 3 pounds at the max. That's when a normal person would feel sensation. Now you're overall, I would say overall competitive eaters, probably your average, if I was to guess. Now this is just a guess. I don't know. I never really talked to them about it, but I would have to say that on average, I would say the average competitive eater is probably around somewhere around a gallon and a half, gallon and a quarter to a gallon and a half. What? Until they feel sensation of fullness. Now you're on your elite side. They can get on the other side of 3 gallons, you know? So, I mean, you're talking about 24 to 27 pounds of total volume. And I know that there's at least, I would say in the United States, maybe 6 to 8 people that can do more than 3 gallons. So that's kind of one of them things where it's, you know, and you don't kiss and tell. Nobody, you know, nobody knows where your capacity is at. People can speculate and people can, you know, yeah. I always tell people, they'll say, oh, you got to be above 2.5 gallons. And I always say, yeah, I'm somewhere between 1 and 4, yeah. You know? So, I mean, I keep them guessing, you know, I'm not going to come out and tell somebody, hey, this is where I'm at. And this is because then they know how to prepare to go up against me, you know? So it's kind of one of them things where it's like, you know, we always joke around, like me and my buddy Andy, I'll say, I don't even know why you're training anymore. I already know you're at 4 gallons or whatever. And he'll say, oh yeah, you wish, pal. And I'm like, I'm not going to sleep on you. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know where you're at, you know, and there's a camaraderie that comes along with it. You know, you're joking around and somebody, you know, somebody will say to you, oh, you're at 2.5 gallons. And I'll say, no, I'm not, you know, and then you'll put up a crazy number and they'll say, see, I told you weren't at 2.5. And I'll say, well, I didn't tell you I wasn't above it.
Yeah.
You just asked me if I was at 2.5. I just told you I didn't tell you I was at 2.5. That doesn't mean I'm above it or below it, you know? So, and there's a little bit of joking that goes on in the background behind stuff like that, you know, and people go back and forth but there's a camaraderie. It's like any sport, you know, there's a mutual respect. There's a mutual camaraderie that goes along with competitive eating and seeing people at contests and razzing each other and giving each other a hard time, you know? And, you know, like for instance, somebody will post a video where they eat a burrito and it takes them, I don't know, 2 minutes or something. And I'll put on there, I remember the first time I ate a burrito, you know, or something. And, or like somebody will do a pizza challenge. And this is, I hope that most competitive eaters watch this podcast because I'm going to share it because I want people to hear this statement. People will post a picture of a team pizza challenge and there'll be 2 people or 3 people doing it. And I always put the joke out there, and this is sheerly what it is. It's absolutely a joke. I don't mean any malice behind it. I'm not stabbing at you. I always say, why so many people for such a small pizza? You know, and it's, I know it's funny, but that's what it's meant to, it's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of people over the years that took that to heart, and that was never really the intention. Yeah, I'm razzing you, but it's supposed to be all part of the fun, you know, and, yeah, but I can openly admit that I hurt some people's feelings by doing that. People got upset. Oh, he's a jerk. He's smug. He acts better than everybody else. And I was just trying to have fun and joke around, you know. But in the exchange, if those people were to call me and say, hey, you know, how can I finish that pizza by myself? I'd be more than happy to say, well, this is what I would do if it was me, you know.
Sure. One thing I was going to ask was, when you sort of, is there a, and again, it goes back to the, if there's an event and you know the food that you're going to eat, do you know the entrants that are going to be there? Or do you turn up and you go, oh, holy shit, like Phil's there and I know he can eat more than me or he can eat quicker than me? Or do you know that the field that you're competing against all the time? Or do you get some people walking you, oh, I can't believe he's here because I know he's quicker than me? Or...
I think that for the most part, we kind of, a lot of the times in competitive eating, I don't know necessarily so much on the independent side as like major league eating. I think that a lot of those guys are like, hey, which contest are you going to? There's more than one contest that weekend. And those guys kind of divide and conquer, whereas on the independent circuit, we don't have as many options. So most people are like, hey, are you guys going to this? Are you guys going to that? You know, like the guy in the chat right now, Sean the Mouth Eats. he'll always say, hey, are you going to this contest or that contest? Because if Molly and you are going, I'm not even going to waste a trip, you know? And I always say to him, I'm like, hey dude, you should come anyways, because it's all about having fun and hanging out, you know? And I mean, as long as you're not out a bunch of money by coming, it's worth hanging out and spending time and joking around and having a good time. And, you know, I can tell you one thing in competitive eating, there's always something exciting. And one of the most exciting things that I've seen lately is the rivalry between Sean and Andy. They're two eaters that have very comparable skills. And so it's fun to watch them. Like, they did a hot dog contest last month where me and Molly were in California. So it was Andy and they were neck and neck, Andy and Sean. They were in Pittsburgh and it was neck and neck and the crowd was going crazy. And that's great. That's great for business, because when push comes to shove, competitive eating is a business and people need to start looking at it that way. I've always said, for years and years and years, that somebody should turn competitive eating into wrestling. That's exactly what they should market it like. And I actually tried that with, that was my main game with Elite Eats Entertainment when I launched that brand, because I believed in that. And that was really the way the system was going to run. I was going to run it like professional eating, you know, storylines. And there was going to be like at table, you know, we're not squaring off in the circle. We're squaring off at the table and trash talk and big storylines and backstories and characters and, you know, but, you know, obviously, the world had different plans for that. You know, when COVID hit, you know, E3 kind of became obsolete, because a lot of the things we had under contract and a lot of the things we were working on, when people got opened back up, the first thing they pulled the plug on was unneeded expenses, and food contests were right on top of that list. Oh, we're not doing that because we don't have 10 grand now, or we don't have 5 grand, or, you know, and I understand that. And I don't harbor any hard feelings towards any of those brands that said, you know, we can't afford that anymore. And that's understandable. So as far as Elite Eats Entertainment and the way that I was going to market that brand and kind of build that company, it was kind of one of them things that's, it's kind of on the back burner now at this point. So maybe something I revisit when I retire from competitive eating full time, so that I can concentrate on the business side of that. But as far as it right now, it's kind of a dead in the water, you know. So you mentioned
the independent sort of professional eaters, and then you mentioned, was there like, did you say like there's like a pro league or something? So that there's two, are there like different circuits then, and how do you generate the, I suppose, that the prize money? Is it companies? Is it obviously sponsorship? Is that how it works? And what's the difference between when you mentioned that there's obviously an independent and then there's a separate entity? I can't remember what you said. Was it the pro league or whatever it was that you said?
So basically in the United States, we have two options. You can be an independent eater, which means you kind of go to where you want to go and participate, or you're in Major League Eating, which is MLE, which they have their own sets of contests that they work with sponsors with, like Nathan's is a contract. The thing about Major League Eating is you're in a contract with them. You sign with them, you sign 3 years at a time, and you can't do any contest outside of that. Anything that they don't host, you can't do. And independent can't, we can't show up at an MLE event and eat with them, you know? Right. So you have to, if you don't sign their contract, you can't do their contests and you can't go against their eaters. But when you're in Major League Eating, you can't just go down to the Joe Schmo watermelon eating contest and eat in that, because then Major League Eating's upset because they didn't make any money off you.
Right. So the MLE, the Major League Eating. Yep. How do they recruit the eaters? Do they offer retainers? Do they offer a basic? Is it like a an extra salary? How do they recruit the eaters to become non-independent and to become MLE eaters?
Well, I mean, I've turned down the contract multiple times, and because I feel like a contract should be negotiable, but they don't really negotiate with you. They kind of just say, this is how it's going to go. This is what we're offering you. And if you don't agree to it, well then sorry, but they're not paying their eaters to travel. They're not giving them any, I mean, they may be, they may be getting extra opportunities, quote unquote, and that's great. You know, but Major League Eating's taking a part of it. You know, hey, you know, we created this opportunity for you, but we want to get paid too, you know? So like, let's say Joe's Crab Shack or, you know, Carl D's Hot Dogs wants to have a contest, you know, they'll call Major League Eating. Major League Eating will say, yeah, we'll host your contest and we'll get you your eaters and we'll do this. It's going to cost you 10 grand. you know, right. For instance, okay. You know, so that's how Major League Eating makes their money. So you have to pay us $10,000 plus we need a $5,000 prize purse. So now you got a $1,500 bill. Was Joey Chestnut going to be there? Well, yeah, Joey can be there, but now it's going to cost you $25,000.
Oh, okay.
If you want Mickey Sudo or you want Joey Chestnut at your event, say you guys have a restaurant and you want those people at your event, you have to pay for them to be there because they'll say, well, Joey can be there, but it's going to cost you $10,000. You know, so they have that hold on you where if you own a restaurant, but you want that name there, you have to pay for it. You don't have a choice. Yeah. You can't get Joey Chestnut without Major League Eating.
Right. Okay. I was just struggling with the sort of the model as to if Killer Kennedy was to sign for MLE, what would they get? What benefit to them would there be of you joining them? And that would be your name associated with going to a particular restaurant and a particular place, and therefore that generates income and that generates interest, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, that's why they'd be willing to pay MLE, i.e. you.
They own your likeness, basically. You're employed by them where, you know, if a company calls and says, hey, we want so-and-so, yeah, well, you have to hire us if you want them because they can't eat in your contest regardless.
Yeah.
So they have a loophole on, you know, but it's one of them things where I'm just like, for me, if Major League Eating would approach me again, I would say, well, I'm not going to sign your contract because there's nothing in it for me. It benefits you guys. The contracts don't benefit the eater. They benefit the company.
Yeah.
You know, now if you could negotiate a contract and say, I want my travel to the contest paid for. Okay, yeah. You're giving, you know, like a lot of independent contests, they're paying our way. You know, like we did Tom's Donuts in Angola, Indiana back in April. And, you know, we got an appearance fee and we got some travel money, you know. So that's one of the things so now we don't have a bunch of out-of-pocket expense. So now when we go and win prize money, we're actually winning the prize money. We're not paying to eat in your contest and recouping some of our money.
Yeah, so you're not winning $5,000, but it's actually cost you $4,000 to get there and whatever it may be. So actually you're only picking up £1,000. What you're doing is now you're saying, if we're going to win $5,000, actually that's $5,000 clear profit, and therefore that's from my pocket, and therefore that's worth my while going.
Correct. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. By all means. And that's just, you know, it's kind of like the last time that I turned down the contract when I was approached with it, I said, the problem is, you know, I wrote back a rebuttal and I said, well, these are the changes I want to make to the contract. Well, we don't make any changes. And I said, well, I've been in business too long to know that a contract is based on changes and it's based on an agreement. If I can't make changes to it, it's not a contract. That's not a contract. That's your rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not offering me anything. You're saying, sign this, we own you, that's it. And I always said, well, then I'm not in, you know. And I said, well, and I said, don't approach me again until you're willing to negotiate stuff like that, because I'm never going to say yes.
Right.
No, you can see now why someone would want to remain independent. That doesn't sound like a benefit. You know, it's one that benefits the company and not you guys. So why on earth would you want to do it unless you want to get your name out there? So if you did want to get your name out there, you did want to get into the world of competitive eating, what's the best advice that you would give to somebody?
I would say the best advice I would have to give somebody that wants to get into competitive eating is start out slow and do it as a hobby and enjoy it, because I can tell you one thing, if you want to get to a point where you, I guess, quote unquote, want to get elite, if you want to get really good at something, you it consumes a lot of your time. It consumes a lot of your, you know, your, it's almost like going to the gym. You have to do it every day. You have to be dedicated to it. You have to keep getting better at it. You can't become stagnant at it. You know, you can't, oh, I'm going to go to the gym today, and then you don't go for 4 days, and then you, oh, I'm going to go to the gym today. And, you know, so you can't train for competitive eating, stop for a month, and then decide, oh, I'm going to train again today for competitive eating because I want to get good at it. You know, it's kind of one of them things where once you start, if you want to get to a certain level, you just got to continue until you achieve that. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I haven't really done that much research into the UK, but sort of how big is competitive eating in the States, for example? I mean, how many elite eaters are there out there? How many events are there? I mean, you mentioned, was it a couple every month or whatever it may be? But in terms of the MLE, how many eaters do they have? How many professional eaters are independent? How big is it?
Well, MLE ranks 50 people. But I would have to say that their elite eaters are anybody from 1 through 10. Now, I would have to say when I would classify somebody as an elite eater, I would say crazy capacity and unmatchable speed. I would have to say that there may be in the United States, I would have to say, I'm going to say a half dozen to 10.
Right. Okay.
I'm going to say six to 10. And that's subjective because some of them are semi-retired. Some of them are retired. Some of them came back. Some of them, you know, and I, if I was to say active eaters, I would say six elite eaters. And I would say that anywhere between, I think MLE has anywhere between four, I think I'm going to say four contests a month. I'm not exactly sure. Independent, they just kind of pop up. So I can't really even speak for independents because it's kind of like, hey, did you see there's a contest this weekend? No. Oh, there's one. Okay. Let's get in the car and go. You know, so it's because they don't have that mainstream exposure, okay. You know, like the hot dog contest last weekend, that just happened to be something I got tagged in twice on Facebook. And then a guy messaged me and said, hey, I watch your channel and this place near me is having a hot dog contest. And that's how I found out about it. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to a hot dog contest Saturday. So, but like I said, that also has to be weighed pros and cons. Can I make money by doing that? Do I have a reason to drive 3 hours and 3 hours back for $500? Can I do something else in that area to make my trip worth it? You know? So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, do you ever do more than one in a weekend then? It sounds like you do. I mean, that blows my mind that after doing one, I always think when you watch Man V Food, so the guy goes around, he tries a bunch of different food in restaurants. I'm thinking, you don't fill up. You're going to eat a big meal tomorrow. You know what I mean? You know?
Yeah.
Do you do more than one in a weekend?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If we're traveling, we try to do multiples. Yeah. And it puts a beating on your body. But like I said, you have to make the best of your trip. You know, you got to make YouTube content. You got to get videos, you know. The thing that you got to realize, if you go into restaurants and you're doing challenges, most food challenges are anywhere between 3 and 6 pounds, and I could technically do three of those back to back, you know, and not really be in any issue. But you have to weigh the pros and cons. If you go away for a weekend, you have to make that trip valuable to you, because if you're spending time on the road, you're spending money, and if it's costing you money, then it's absolutely a waste of time to even go.
So after a contest, and particularly if you've had multiple contests, either on the same day or through a weekend, this is going to sound a stupid question, but do you physically feel okay? Can you drive? Do you feel, you know, can you still function as you would do normally? Or do you need like a rest period, a recuperation period? Could you literally just have an eating contest, then jump in the car and drive and actually be not affected at all?
Exhausted, completely exhausted. Because you got to realize when you're on the road, like for instance, say Molly and me go on a trip to California, we're doing multiple challenges, trying to make the best of benefit that we can to, you know, gain YouTube content. Plus we're doing contests. Most people think that when you're on the road, oh, they're out, you know, and enjoying, and they're on vacation, and we're in a car driving 7, 8, 12 hours, getting on a plane, flying 6 hours, renting a car, driving another 7 hours. You fly back home, you get in the car, you drive back home, you're completely exhausted. I mean, they're not vacations by any means. They're usually, you run yourself ragged to, you know, make a couple hundred to $1,000 and come back home and resume normal life, you know. So
wow. Well, and it, in a way, excuse my ignorance, in terms of you mentioned that you have sort of kids and stuff, your home life, how do you ever take your family with you to make the weekend worthwhile? If you go into a particular place and we'll go to this place, and yes, I've got an eating contest, but we can also catch this park or this, whatever it may be, you know, is that something that you do as a family? Or
my daughter's grown and out of the house, so basically you know, when she was younger, she used to come with me on some of the adventures, but she's grown and out on her own. So I mean, I got two dogs to take care of, but they usually, I don't think they'd want to go on food challenge adventures.
Is it not something that you ever think, oh, you know, dad's really good at this, do you not fancy getting involved in it? Or, you know, is that a conversation you've ever had or they've ever had?
I wouldn't have wanted Kylie to really, I mean, she had some fun with it a few times, but I would have never wanted her to really get full involved in that or want to become a competitive eater or anything like that. You know, I always said, make some of yourself.
So here's the question then. Once you're done with this podcast, you know, you get into around about dinner time, as we call it here in the UK, over there in the States, you're going to grab yourself some queso, some chips, and a couple of tacos. Are you going to feel satiated after such a small meal?
I don't really necessarily. You don't really eat to feel fullness. You eat to feel satisfied. You know what I mean? So the sensation of a fullness, if let's say, quote unquote, you're a high capacity eater, you're never going to feel that sensation of fullness on a quote unquote normal meal. You know, yeah. So you're to feel fullness, I'm going to have to eat 20 pounds of food to feel full, you know, so I'm not going to sit down and eat 20 pounds at every meal because I want to feel that sensation of fullness. You know, it's all about that balance. Like I said, it's when push comes to shove, it's all about calories in and calories out and keeping that balance and, you know, getting back to normal and just being satisfied with your daily diet.
So do you, again, might sound a silly question. Do you feel hungry if you were just to have a couple of tacos for an evening meal or what, you know, what I would call a regular normal sized meal? After eating that, do you still feel hungry?
No, not really. No, I'm completely satisfied with a normal diet. You know, my normal diet consists of 2,200 to 2,500 calories a day. So, I mean, and my body's become accustomed to that. So if I stay consistent with that, I never really feel hungry or, you know, like, are there times where I'm like, man, I just want to go eat a large pizza because I'm hungry? Sure. But I think everybody does that. I don't think that's.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not a competitive eater. And I think that sometimes they got like an absolutely wolf down a huge pizza. For us, it'd be like a 12, 16 inch or whatever. You know, you're talking like a truck load size pizza or whatever. But yeah, every now and then you get that, don't you think? God, I'm hungry. I could eat a horse sort of thing.
Well, one of the things this guy's done as well is he's taken on the whole menu of Domino's.
Yeah, McDonald's, the 1-2-3 value menu. I ate that one time. I actually doubled it and ate it. I ate it twice. I ate it twice, but I will admit, full disclosure, when the camera cut, it wasn't pretty.
Yeah. And was that super size or was that just regular size?
They actually don't offer super size anymore in America. They deemed it unhealthy. And does unsupersizing this entire menu item, eating the entire menu twice, does it matter if I supersize it at this point? Because it's already got like 17,000 calories in it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, for absolute clarity, he didn't need to supersize it. It's because he's eating the whole lot.
Yeah. It was supersized in a natural case, yeah. Yeah.
That is incredible.
You guys in the UK, you do have one of the biggest competitive eating channels right there. Beard Meets Food has one of the largest food channels. Yeah. Right now, his channel has gone through the roof. His followers are just, I mean, climbing on top of each other. And his views for videos, I mean, he's got that market cornered, you know. So I got a passport now, and there's still in the back of my mind, I'd love to travel to the UK. I know that Molly and myself have discussed that a few times and trying to hook up with Beard while we're over there. And, you know, I think it'd be a great opportunity. I've never been to the UK, and I'd love to get over there at some point in time.
If you ever do that, you know, if you drop us a message, drop us an email, what have you, we'll come over. We'll come watch you eat some food. We might
have a sample of some as well.
But we'll have fries and a Coke maybe on the side while we watch. But yeah, we'd love to be
the thing. Obviously, the thing with the UK is that, you know, from effectively top to bottom, from the top of Scotland to the bottom of England, it's sort of 7 or 8 hours. You know, that's
tops.
You know, that's about it. So wherever you are in the UK, it's probably only going to be 3 or 4 hours from where you are, so that's fine.
You guys could share a pizza, and then I can say, why two guys for such a small pizza?
absolutely,
you can definitely do
adding clarity and go back to the part in the podcast where I said I always told all the eaters I meant no offense by that. It was always supposed to just be funny. People took offense to it, and I understand that, but it was always meant to just be a joke.
No, and the thing is as well, like when you said that as well, I did watch a video of yourself and Molly taking on a pizza challenge, which is supposed to be a team challenge, and you guys did a full pizza each and finished it. So you know what I mean? It's mind blowing. It is mind blowing.
Yeah.
And we're around about the hour mark now, which is normally where we bring it to a close. So first of all, we need to thank you for your time today because it's I've learned a lot, dude. Have you learned a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. Like eye opening. But I love this episode. It's been brilliant.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So have you got any final thoughts you want to close out with and leave a message for our listeners?
Now, the only thing I'd like to say is I appreciate you guys' time, you know, and if you guys ever need anything or we get over there, I'd love to meet up and, you know, maybe do something else over there. And I encourage all your, you know, all your listeners to get on YouTube and check us out. You know, I got Killer Kennedy and you know, all the other eaters. I got other, you know, I got Molly linked on there, and I got Darren, I got Andy, I got, you know, I have all kinds of people listed on there. Make sure you go on there and check those guys out, you know, and sub to their channel and follow us. And like I said, I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, no, we appreciate you spending your time as well with us tonight. We really, really do. So, and also we need to say thank you to Sean, who sent us many comments as well tonight, most of which he's been backing you up exactly what you've said. And, you know, the last comment he made was about competitive eaters, that it is mostly for fun and the love of the sport. And even if they lose, that there is a great camaraderie. And so, that, you know, it's been fantastic.
Sure.
So, did you want to share your YouTube channel then with our listeners so they know exactly where to find you?
Yeah, just go on YouTube and type in Dan Kennedy, Killer. You can type in just Killer Kennedy, Dan Kennedy. It'll all pop right up on there for you.
Indeed, indeed. And we'll stick a link in there for you. So, if you'd like to say goodbye.
Yep, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Cool. Gaza?
Yeah, it's eye-opening, actually, this episode. And, you know, I always look forward to learning about new things, having new guests on, sort of broadening horizons and stuff. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been great to record, obviously, after a little bit of a hiatus sort of thing. You know, we're back, both back in the UK now, which is great. Looking forward to the next time. But, yeah, I just want to thank Dan, thank him for joining us, thank him for what he said, and opening our eyes in terms of competitive eating. So until the next time, and fingers crossed, if Dan does get over to the UK and we can hook up and we can perhaps order a 9-inch pizza and share it and then watch Dan eat the rest of the menu or whatever. That sounds like a plan.
That's it. And we fully expect him to take the mickey and we'll leave a slice or two.
And that's it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm full.
Yeah, that's it. So we will say thank you for joining us. And all the folks out there who've joined, thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next week where we'll be talking about something entirely different.